Well, hello there. Lots to chat about on the latest edition of the RTÉ Soccer Podcast, a breakaway European Super League. Filippo and Shane gone from Dundalk. Jose gone from Tottenham. Tis never dull, James O'Toole, in the footballing world, is it?
And you forgot Derry City picked up a point. So, you know, it's all changed. It's all changed this week, Adrian. All changed.
You're smiling. You're smiling. Even though I can't see you because we're remote and that's the way I like it, baby. But you're smiling. I can hear a smile.
I'm trying to smile, yeah. Just smile through it all. As they say.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's plenty of matches left. We're also joined by Carl Shepherd. How are you doing, Shep?
Yeah, I'm very good, very good. Thanks, Fionn.
Yeah, I imagine you consumed a lot of football, but did you manage to watch Cork City and Shelburne in the First Division, two of your former clubs going head-to-head?
I managed to watch about 60 minutes of it. It was not a good viewing for Cork City. I suppose they don't have the quality of players that they used to have, and I suppose in terms of Shelburne, they look fantastic. It was almost a training session for them, attack v defence, for large parts. But a big win for Shells and worrying times for Cork.
Okay, motoring very nicely indeed, Shells, as indeed are Athlone Town, top of the First Division. We'll be chatting to Adrian Carberry on the podcast very shortly. We'll be talking to Martin Ziegler about that European Super League, the big news that dominated over the course of the weekend. But I guess, James, we have to start with Dundalk. More upheaval at Oriel Park just a few weeks into the season. As I mentioned, Filippo and Shane gone. Filippo Giovagnoli and Shay Keegan, they both left the club. Dundalk ninth in the Premier Division, 2 points from 15 available. They drew 1-1 with St. Pat's at Oriel Park on Saturday night. Junior with a late equaliser for the Lady Whites. After the game, the sporting director of Dundalk, Jimmy Chilton, was asked by Des Kern about the management situation at the club.
Let's talk about maybe the last 24 hours, because obviously it came out that Shane Keegan was no longer at the club. Can you clarify first for us, was that Shane Keegan, was that a resignation?
We're not going to make any comments at the minute. We're going to wait, and in due course you will get a statement from the club.
Okay, so at the moment, can you tell us if it was Filippo's last game?
And again, you will get a statement from the club in due course.
Okay, can we expect that soon, do you think, Jim?
You'll get that in due course, sir.
Okay. Now, can I ask then, if the statement is coming, is there a plan in place, given the departures that there have been? Is the plan already in place for what's going to happen for the rest of the season?
You will get that in due course, sir. You will definitely get that in due course.
Okay. There's nothing else you can tell us at the moment?
Absolutely not.
There you go. Not giving much away there, Shep, is he? Jim Magilton, the sporting director of Dundalk. But of course, as we know now, Filippo is, well, confirmed to depart the scene. And obviously Shane Keegan announced over the course of the weekend that he was leaving the club. But so much going on at Dundalk. I'm sure if you're a Dundalk fan, you're quite troubled by what's been unfolding over the last couple of days, wouldn't you be?
Yeah, you'd be really, really worried. Look, from, I suppose, an ex-Cork player, I was hoping that this would have happened when I was at Cork and playing against Dundalk. We were hoping for years they'd slip up. But I suppose ever since Peak Six came in, it's been worrying for Dundalk fans that you'd be hoping that, look, the ground would be improved, the pitch would be improved, that they'd be bringing in great signings and looking to retain their best players. But if anything, it's been the complete opposite of it. Even the managerial situation that went on this year, there's something not right there at that club. And for Dundalk fans themselves, it's a worrying time. And I just hope that, look, Peak Six go and look at it and say, OK, we need to invest in the stadium, make sure we get a good manager put in place so that this team, who's been one of the best teams ever to play in the League of Ireland, is back challenging where they belong.
What have you made, James, of the last few days at Oriel Park?
I think more along of what I've been saying for a couple of weeks now, Adrian. I think it's, at this stage, it's almost like a circus. Even Jim coming out the other night and saying, like, we all knew that Shane had left the club by the time of kickoff on Friday, yet he didn't mention it. He should have kind of mentioned, yes, Shane has left the club. And even in their press statement today, the last three lines are given over to Shane Keegan. The rest of it's given over to Filippo and Giuseppe Rossi. Since they've come in, have they put any money into the ground? No, they haven't. They've put money into making the players comfortable in a nice players' room and gym and stuff like that. But the actual ground itself, they haven't put a penny in. I can't see that changing. Because at the end of the day, they're an investment company. They need to make profit somewhere. And they're not going to put money into something they know they're not going to make profit out of. Will they get a manager in time? I don't know. Not mentioned today either, who's going to be in charge tomorrow in Derry. So it seems to be all up in the air, and it's going to be a tough job for Jim McGilton to find himself a manager within the next 60 days.
Well, James, the chairman of the club, Bill Hulsizer, was quoted in the Examiner today saying that Jim McGilton will make his recommendation to us for a new manager and the board will consider it. We don't want the process to take a month and drain the resources of the club and the job that Jim has to do. We would prefer if it didn't take a month, but we also need to get the right person. Dundalk can still win the league. Of course we can. And we can still have a very good season. So they're giving themselves a little bit of time in terms of appointing a new manager, it would seem.
Yeah, they give themselves a bit of time. I'm going to take it between Jim and Giuseppe, which even the fact that Giuseppe Rossi staying on at the club seems a little bit odd. But I'd say they're going to give themselves that. Like, if Jim sits in as as the manager now, we're okay because he's a pro license, so they can take their time to see who they want. But if he doesn't, and Giuseppe's the one, they only have 60 days to make this decision, and they need to get it right. But again, this is something like this hasn't come out of nowhere. The FEI sanctioned this as well. The FEI had mentioned about this, and they were asked about who's managing the club, how's it going forward, and the FEI said, "Oh, we're keeping an eye on it." So there's a bit of the FEI have to take a bit of responsibility for what's happening here as well. But they need to get a manager in quick. We know Dundalk have started poorly over the last number of years and then caught up. But I fear that if they continue in this vein with no manager and a manager can push them on, the championship is gone.
Well, we're joined on the line by John Gill. John, many thanks for joining us. You, of course, were first team coach back last summer. You left in August, not too long after Vinnie Perth departed the scene. What have you made of what's been going on in your absence since you left Dundalk, and especially over the course of the weekend?
Hey, you guys. It's very sad, Adrian. It's quite sick to see it happening. You know, mainly due to there's still a lot of players out there who I'd be very, very familiar with, and also they've a great fan base. It's sad, but it's not irretrievable. It can be retrieved. It will take a little bit of work and a little bit of foresight on Dundalk's part, but it can be retrieved. But it needs to be done, you know, ASAP. In my view, clarity needs to be given to the players and to the people supporting the club. And you know, draw a line in the sand and try and move forward.
When you say clarity is required, what are you suggesting?
Well, in my view, they need to appoint a qualified manager. You know, that's not going to be easy. They need to appoint somebody that's going to give leadership direction. I'm not saying that Filippo didn't give that. He was put into a position, very difficult position. But the club knew about the qualification. His qualifications or lack of. Obviously, they got the rap in the knuckles last year from UEFA and a heavy fine. You know, what I don't understand actually this year is Pats have a very similar situation to what was there when I was there with Vinnie with the licence. Now, with Vinnie, albeit Vinnie was enrolled in a pro licence, Stephen O'Donnell didn't get on the new pro licence at the moment. He's working with Alan Matthews. Why wasn't Filippo in the dugout? Like, that's what I don't understand. I can't get my head around. Was that a directive from the FAI? I think that was made unclear, and I think that's where the confusion and maybe the lack of clarity of, you know, what was going on. I think it affected players.
Why do you think that might have been the case that he wasn't?
I don't know, because as you mentioned,
Stephen O'Donnell would be side by side with Alan Matthews. Why not the same scenario?
Doing that at the moment and doing a very good job doing it. I don't know why Filippo wasn't in the dugout, and I don't think anybody does, to be honest. Was it a club decision? Was it an FAI decision? I can't see it being a UEFA decision. If you're a tradesman and you have a toolbox, if you don't have your toolbox with you, you can't do your job. It was never going to work. Some managers like to maybe sit in a stand maybe for a first half, but watching what was going on there, it was like watching a car crash.
John, it's about time the FEI just stick to their own rules, isn't it? There's so many people in this country who have a pro license who would jump at the job of trying to manage a club in this country. But if this continues to happen, where people are brought in just because they have a pro license to sit behind a fellow who doesn't have it, it does no good for the reputation of the league and of fellas who have pro licenses who can't get a job, basically.
No, I agree. And listen, I was on the first pro license course that was ran here, and that was in 2007. I think we all qualified in 2008. And to be honest, that was my last year managing a team. I've worked as a coach since. I actually haven't managed a team since I've had my pro license. And there's a lot more guys like myself. Now, is the pro license, I've gone on record, do you need a pro license to manage? In my view, no. Does it help? Yes, helps you a little bit, but it's, you know, you self-educate yourself. You can self-educate yourself. There's a new breed of coaches coming through. There's a younger breed of coach coming through, which is good. I think that's good because, you know, I think it's good for the game. But there's a grey area where, you know, one minute they're saying you had to have it. Then they were saying you don't have to have it. Now I think once you're enrolled and you're allowed to manage, it's this. I agree. I think there needs to be clarity. There needs to be set rules put in place. If you don't have a pro license, you cannot manage. You cannot bring somebody over your head that has a pro license. Now, I'm saying that, and I was brought into Dundalk 2 years ago to help the club in what was an unprecedented time. Stephen Kenny had left the club quite suddenly, and I think the club wanted continuity, and I think they picked the right man at the time for the job. Vinny knew the club, knew the players, and was only penalty kicks away from doing a clean sweep. Then gets 8 games the following season, gets enrolled in his pro licence, completes his pro licence, but gets 8 games the following season. And out of the 8 games, you know, we'd 14 points. He'd lost one game, drew a game. It's baffling.
And John, you left shortly after Vinny did last summer. Tell me the background to that, because obviously you've been very associated down through the years with Dundalk, you know, as a manager and obviously involved at various levels. But your own decision then to leave after Vinny had departed the scene. Tell us what your thought process was back then.
Well, again, Aidan, it goes back. I've always done the same when I was with Shamrock Rovers with Trevor Crawley. When Trevor Crawley left, when Trevor Crawley was let go from Rovers, I didn't hang around. If I go to work for a manager and a manager brings me in, one of the things that he will get off me is undivided loyalty. Now, some people will tell me that I'm foolish for that and that there's no such thing as football. Well, I have a different opinion to that. So when Vinny was, when Vinny and the club decided to part ways, there's no denying I was asked to stay on. I could have stayed on, but I just didn't. It didn't sit right with me. It didn't sit right the way Vinny had been treated. I just felt, you know, that I couldn't work under those conditions. Now it's a great club, and paradoxically, I think Peak Six is, it's important that Peak Six stay involved with Dundalk, because, you know, there's not many people out there that are going to put their hand in the pocket every year and put a million and a half into their pocket and run a football club. We're looking for investment in Irish football. So in that sense, I think I think we need more Peak Sixes now. Where the problem is that when you need parameters, if people are going to come in and invest, they need to trust their management structure, they need to trust the manager, and then get on and give them the tools to do the job.
And John, what was your relationship like with Peak Six, and in particular with the chairman of Dundalk, Bill Hulsizer?
I got on okay with him. I would have been nearest to him in age probably when we were there, and he was over a lot. That was another thing. COVID came in, Adrian, as well, and that didn't help. Bill would have been over a couple of times, previous to that. And he's an affable guy. He's a very forthright individual. Knows what he wants. Would be very opinionated. I got on okay with him, did get okay with him even when I left. Got a little bit fractious when I decided, because I think he thought I wasn't going to leave, but I'd always made that was always going to be my intention, and I had told people that. I found him okay. Now again, would be very opinionated and would be very be very strong-willed and wouldn't be shy about coming forward.
And what about suggestions that, in terms of team selection, that there was outside interference away from, say, the likes of yourself and Vinny Perth? Is that true?
Bill would have had opinions, but and probably was a very strong, forceful individual, as Vinny was. So when you get two people like that, you're always going to have maybe differences of opinion. I just feel that at the time, we should have left alone, let Vinny get on with the job, and let him concentrate. Vinny was the one, funny enough, that was advocating a sporting director. And I know that for a fact, because I was at meetings where that was discussed. And I think that would have definitely helped Vinny's cause. Wanted a sporting director. So Vinny was the one that actually advocated that. And that happened after Vinny left. But so, like, that wasn't an idea that was just thrown out there. I still think that Vinny didn't get enough time. And like, 8 games is not enough time to because the season before, we'd gone 13 points behind Rovers, and it's well documented, we came back and won the league by 15 points or whatever it was. So it was a strange time, Adrian. Very, very strange.
Yeah. And on that, Vinnie, speaking on News Talk on Sunday, said he'd be open to discussing maybe a return to Dundalk. What do you think of that? And would you be interested in getting involved in the club again?
Listen, what I think is not really what happens to me doesn't really matter. Vinnie, I think feels he has unfinished business there, and in fairness, I think he has as well. People forget as well, Adrian. Around the time, you remember Harry Taff? You remember that the ends up with Harry Taff?
Yes.
Vinnie also had lost a brother-in-law, two people in that week that it all blew up. I just feel, I actually think Vinnie, believe it or not, would be a good fit for the club. He knows the players. He knows the club, the support. A lot of the supporters would like him. I think he'd be a better manager now than he was then, even with the experience that he has. But he would need certain perimeters, I think, to do the job and to be allowed to do the job. And to be honest with you, I think some people say never go back. I actually think it would be a good fit for Vinny. I think he would go back hungry. I think he would go back with a lot more knowledge in his head, and maybe possibly working with Jim McGilton, who's a sporting director, letting him probably deal with the day-to-day stuff as regards dealing with the board. I think it could work.
John, Carl Shepherd here. How are you?
How are you, Carl? How are you, Shep?
Not too bad. Quick one. How do you think, I suppose, the squad will shape up now? You look at Rogers left, Massey's left, Hoare, Gannon, Benson, all lads who were vital when you were there. How do you think the squad will cope without so many leaders like that?
It's going to be difficult, Shep. It's a bit like when you were down in Cork. That Cork team kind of imploded as well when players left, and actually John Caulfield left. Listen, there's still enough good players up there, and I think there's been some very good players added to the squad. Some I don't know about. Some it might take a bit more time to get used to our way of playing football here and the physicality of it and the intensity of it. I still feel there's an excellent squad down there, Carl, one that can be definitely turned around fairly quickly. If the right appointment is made quickly, I've no doubt about that. But there are other big leaders. You've still got the likes of Shields. McElhaney would be a big leader as well. You know, you've got Andy Boyle. There's some very big characters there that can still, help that club get going on a run. And they're well capable of putting together a good, unbeaten long run like we did 2 years ago.
So you seem quite optimistic. I mean, despite all that's going on, that there's plenty of football to be played in the season and that they can turn it around. But obviously, the next appointment and the appointment of a manager, they have to get this one right, don't they?
It would be, and it needs to be done. Like saying that they've 60 days, I think some people would say the horse has bolted now. It certainly would have bolted in 60 days' time, I feel, if you don't get the right appointment. I think they need to make a fairly quickish appointment. Let somebody come in, let them know what the parameters of the job is, let the players know who the manager is. I think you're going to need strong leadership, but there's definitely a squad there capable of challenging. Now, is it too late? I don't think it is, honestly, because I saw what happened 2 years ago. And, okay, we didn't have the turmoil off the pitch then. You remember Stephen Kenny had just left. People were saying that's the end of Dundalk. Dundalk will miss Stephen Kenny. It was all about Stephen. And listen, Stephen had done a great job, but there were still very good players there. There was still very good staff there. And the continuity helped, I feel, turn that ship around. Even though we went, I think, as I said to you, well documented, 13 points behind Rovers. The core of that group is still there. Yes, those players have left. John Mountney, Robbie Benson, those players, Gannon, Hoare, they're all excellent players. But there are still a number of still very good players there. And they've also signed a couple of international players, the Latvian, the Faroese boy. Look, there's some really good acquisitions there as well. But it needs a strong hand. It needs good leadership.
And how have you been? Have you been watching a lot of football? Are you
missing
this?
Yeah, I've been watching a lot. Yeah, I've been watching a great the new system, the new screen, the streaming system is excellent. I've watched. I don't think I've missed a game, to be honest. So I'm really interested in it. It's been fascinating to watch. I think it's a wide open league. Whoever finishes above Rovers, obviously, I think we'll win the league, especially with Tell coming in July. If that's true. But I still think it's going to be a very close run league this year. I don't think anybody's going to run away with it.
And keen to get back involved again, John, I presume?
It's nearly time for my pension, Adrian. I'm fine. I'm getting on a bit of age now. So, listen, I always say we'll see what happens. I never say never. If something comes up and I think I can make a contribution, I will. I feel good. I'm healthy. I'm fit. That's down the line. I'm enjoying it. I'm a big draw for this league. It's a great league. It doesn't get the credit it deserves at times. The likes of Carl there, he knows the effort that you have to put in this league. It's a really tough league and doesn't get the credit that it deserves at times. From not only supporters here, but from business, the business community. There's some great clubs, a lot of people doing a lot of good jobs, trying to promote the league, and it's something that I'm passionate about.
Okay, well, listen, many thanks for joining us, John. The very best of luck to you in the next wee while, and sure, who knows, we might see you back at Oriel Park. You just never know.
Listen, as the famous Jane, never say never again.
Exactly. All right, listen, we leave it there. Many thanks. That's John Gill joining us on the RT Soccer Podcast. James, just before we finish up on Dundalk, should Filippo get a little more credit? Because obviously he came in and people were looking at his coaching pedigree and the fact that he didn't have the necessary badges and that he'd come from, you know, he was coaching in New York at the time. But, you know, Dundalk still made the group stages of the Europa League. They won the FAI Cup with him at the helm, beating Shamrock Rovers after extra time in the final back in December. So he must have been doing something right.
Yeah, you can give him a bit of credit. In fairness to him, like, give him the cup final as a bit of credit. I think the Europa stuff came very quickly off the back of Vinny departing the club. So the team were already set up. There wasn't many changes needed to be done to the team to get into the group stages. With the group stages of Europe at that stage, it's luck of the draw, to tell you the truth, more than it is coaching, almost, because you could just get a really, really tough draw, like what Shamrock Rovers get, AC Milan. Do you know what I mean? That's what could happen on the draw. But yeah, I suppose he does deserve a lot of credit. The FAI Cup win, like, you leave this country with a cup win under your belt, you've done something well. Let's put it that way, because very few managers are able to say they've done that here. There's a small select few of them who have been able to go to an FAI Cup final or a league or anything like that and walk away with a trophy. So I suppose he does deserve something. I just think that behind the scenes, the way it's set up probably hasn't helped himself. And as I said last week, I'm over the moon that Shane kind of stepped away from it, because it wasn't going to do Shane's reputation any good being part of that setup.
And Shep, just on what John was saying there, he said, you know, that Dundalk can turn it around. I mean, obviously they're on 2 points. The pace setters, Shamrock Rovers, St. Pat's Sligo Rovers, all on 11. Oh, it's a 9-point gap. It's doable, but they need to hit the ground soon.
It is, and it all comes down to how quick they can get someone in who's going to, I suppose, set the standard again of what has been there, of putting the demands on the player. And I'm sure that's what Dundalk are missing right now. You look at even the first half of the game, the last day, Dundalk didn't look anywhere near as fit as St. Pat's did. Now, when St. Pat's dropped off, Dundalk were able to play a bit, and I suppose they grew in confidence. For me, they need to get someone who's going to come in, put plenty and plenty of demands on the players. But then again, they have some seriously good players in there. If you have Pat Hoban, Michael Duffy and Patrick McElhaney in your team, you're not going to be too far off.
All right. Well, of course, elsewhere, I mentioned there Shamrock Rovers, top on goal difference. They won 2-1 against Longford Town at Tallaght Stadium on Saturday evening. Sean Gannon with a deflected effort in the dying seconds. Really hard, of course, on Derry Doyle and Longford. But Shamrock Rovers getting the necessary win by 2-1. Sligo Rovers beat Finn Harps 1-0. 17-year-old Johnny Kenny with his first for the club, closing down Mark McGinley's attempted clearance to tap into the back of the net. Bows, they were 1-0 winners away to Waterford. Back-to-back away 1-0 wins for Keith Long and co. Rob Cornwall with the decisive goal. Derry City came from behind to earn their first point of the season, drawing 1-1, as we mentioned, as James mentioned at the outset. 1-1 with Drogheda United. James Brown put Drogheda in front after 24 minutes, but Ronan Boyce headed in his first Derry goal just before the interval. So that's how that one finished, 1-1. In terms of the table, James, it is very, very tight. It is very, very early, of course. I mentioned the fact that Shamrock Rovers are top on goal difference at the moment. St. Pat's going along very nicely. Sligo Rovers on 11 points. First defeat for Harps. Drogheda on 8. Bows on 7. Longford Town on 4. Waterford on 3. Dundalk on 2. And Derry City on 1. Derry taking on Dundalk on Tuesday night. But what were your other observations from the course of the weekend, James? What stood out for you?
Stood out for me, away goalkeepers are not going to like that end of the ground in the showgrounds, because the last 2 weeks goalkeepers have made mistakes that's cost their teams points. I think one thing that did stand out, and Shep has already mentioned it, the fitness of St. Pat's for in and about 75, nearly 80 minutes was something to behold. They were really, really good, and not only just them being really good, but Chris Forrester looks like he's back to his old self. He was pinging balls all over the place, and it was really good to see them. Another point, Shamrock Rovers, you've already mentioned them. Despite what looked like wasn't going to go their way, they just kept plugging and plugging and plugging and plugging, and the goal eventually comes. And that's kind of a sign of champions, as I will say. I know it's very early in the season, but as John Gill's even mentioned there, if you finish above them, you're probably going to end up champions.
Yeah, Carl, what caught your attention?
Yeah, I suppose it was Sligo really for me when I look at one young Johnny Kenny. What a story. Obviously his dad playing for Sligo and then him scoring when he's 17. It's such a special moment for him and his family. And then when I look at the game as well, a real standout for me was Walter Ferreira. I think when he was at Derry, he probably didn't show the form that he showed when he was at Waterford, but he was frighteningly good in the second half against Finn Harps. And I think Liam Buckley's probably licking his lips at the thought of that front three clicking and what a front three it could possibly be. I'm looking at them thinking they could really push Shamrock Rovers this year if they stay injury free.
James, just a word on Waterford losing at home to Bohemians on Friday evening. Oscar Brennan not involved, Brian Murphy not in goal, Kevin Sheedy addressed both situations afterwards. What do you make of that situation there?
I don't know, it seems a bit odd. No, Brian come out since to suggest that some of the things that he'd walked away from the club were nonsense, and that's not the type of person he is. He did say in his little statement, and this is the only thing we can go off definites of, is that he had words with the management team and that he was fit for Friday. And in fairness, the young lad who stepped in for him wasn't too bad either. He had a good game, but when you're this early into the season, you're hearing stories like this, you don't know whether that's bad for the club or if it's good for the club. Like, is it a case of the managers are asking a lot out of the players and they're not matching up to it? Or is it a case of the players are asking even more from the management team? That's the only way you look at the issue like this. And obviously, when Brian's saying that he had words with them, it may well be the aforementioned, not the latter, if you know what I mean.
We're recording this on Monday afternoon. Five matches on Tuesday night, all kicking off at 7:45. All available, of course, on Watch LOI. Bohemians against Sligo Rovers at Dalyman Park. Derry City against Dundalk. Drogheda United taking on Shamrock Rovers. Longford Town hosting Finn Harps. St Pat's against Waterford. And I guess for you, James, it's Derry against Dundalk. Who would have thought at the start of the season when we saw the fixture list that, you know, after five games that Dundalk would be second from bottom and Derry propping up the table? So both sides looking for their first win, and given all the ructions that have been going on over the last few days at Dundalk, they're ripe for the picking by Derry, aren't they? That's a home banker.
Never, no game's a home banker, Adrian. You should know that. Even you were at the game on Friday evening. Derry actually impressed me in certain aspects of the game on Friday. They were much better in control of the ball. They were much better in midfield. Defence seemed to be a little bit better than they were over the last couple of games, but the cutting edge up front is where they're lacking. And you were there yourself. You probably noticed that as the game's going on. I think they still only create two shots on target for the whole game. And they're up against an Dundalk team. And when we get stuff like this, when the manager disappears, teams usually get a bounce. And as John has said, they're still full of absolutely quality players. I think Declan would be looking at this not as a win, but get something from the game, and he would be more than happy, I would suggest.
And Shep, in terms of the other matches that are on Tuesday night, is there any match in particular that you're saying, oh, that could be interesting?
Yeah, I'm really interested to see how Finn Harps bounced back in the game against Sligo on the weekend. They were very, very poor, and it was very unlike them from all the games I've seen so far. They've had an intensity, so I want to see if it was just a blip in the road or if it's, I suppose, a worrying sign for Ollie. I don't think he'd be too worried. No, Ollie, he'll have this team raring to go again, and I'll probably tip them for 3 points this week.
Well then, as no doubt you've heard, 12 of Europe's biggest soccer clubs have announced the formation of a new Super League competition. A statement from the Super League confirmed that these are the clubs: AC Milan, Arsenal, Atletico Madrid, Chelsea, Barcelona, Inter Milan, Juventus, Liverpool, Manchester City, Manchester United, Real Madrid and Tottenham Hotspur have all joined as founding clubs. Well, we're joined on the line to discuss the formation of this European Super League by Martin Ziegler of The Times. Martin, can you just maybe elaborate on the background to all of this for us, please?
Yeah, so, I mean, the threat of the Super League has been up and down over the last 25 years even, but things seem to become more concrete in January when a proposal document was produced. But I think UEFA thought they'd managed to come to a deal with the European clubs. They were announcing a new format for the Champions League. So it actually came as something of a bombshell when it emerged on Sunday that actually the 12 leading clubs in Europe, including the England's Big Six and Premier League clubs, were basically forming a breakaway Super League, and it's caused an absolute reverberation throughout the European football world.
Yeah, the reaction to the plan, to this breakaway, to put it mildly, hasn't been very favourable. What do you make of the response of footballing people to this breakaway plan?
I think some of it was predictable, I think, you know, that there'll be sort of degrees of outrage. But I do think the sort of completely unanimous condemnation from politicians, and you've got Boris Johnson and Emmanuel Macron, the French president, down to all the official supporters' trusts from the big six English clubs. I think that might have taken the owners aback slightly, because these are the people that they need to, you know, their fans are what the clubs run for. I mean, so if you're taking a view that we want to support those, or are we really only looking for to make money from the sort of global fan base looking to the Far East or whatever? That's a really serious position to take for a football club owner.
And of course, so many footballing people, and you know, the likes of Gary Neville calling it a criminal act, you know, people suggesting it's all about greed, the greed of clubs, but that's a bit rich, isn't it? You know, Premier League clubs have always had self-interest at heart, haven't they?
Well, of course, clubs have self-interest at heart. But, I mean, I think this takes it to another level entirely. The big clubs are already hugely well rewarded by European football. In a way, it's asking, what is the point of being so much richer than everybody else? All they're going to be doing now is competing with each other. They're already doing that. But if they're going to get similar sorts of money, then you could actually argue in the long run, this is disadvantageous for the Premier League clubs, because the rest of Europe will be back on their level now.
So plans are obviously clearly well advanced. What do you think is going to happen? Will they be able to push this through and go to along the clubs, these founding clubs for this Super League?
Well, they've already made a preemptive strike. They've lodged motions in several courts across Europe saying that they intend to launch this tournament and to resist any sort of punitive action from the football authorities, whether that's the football associations, UEFA or FIFA. So this is a really serious move, absolutely. I do actually think that the first place this is going to end up in is the courts somewhere, legal challenges, and that will perhaps determine what the eventual outcome is, whether we see some sort of compromise solution drawn up.
And the clubs involved, I would presume, Martin, would have anticipated that, wouldn't they? They knew it wasn't going to be a straightforward move.
They did anticipate that, so that's why they've lodged these motions in court. That's they knew exactly what was happening. So
yeah.
I think they're hoping that they've sort of got their defence in first.
But they would have anticipated the reaction, I would imagine, from, you know, so many people involved in football right across Europe, wouldn't they?
I think they would have anticipated a fairly large backlash. Whether quite the strength of feeling that has been generated, I'm not so sure that they would have been aware of that. And I mean, it's, you might say, it's one good thing that they aren't going to be supportive in big numbers at their next matches, because you can imagine otherwise there'll be an outpouring of anger towards the owners of these clubs involved.
And ultimately, how do you see this playing out? I guess it's the $6 million question, but obviously, as you mentioned at the outset, this has been rumbling for the last 20, 25 years. So maybe 10
yeah,
years
well,
down the line.
The 4 billion euro question, I think it is.
yeah.
That's the funding commitment they've had from the investment bank JP Morgan to launch the Super League. So I think it's too early to tell how it's going to turn out. But that one thing for certain is that European football is not going to be the same ever again.
And just before we let you go, Martin, just a word on one of the other big stories of the day. Jose Mourinho sacked by Tottenham Hotspur. It's obviously Tottenham have had a very poor season by their high standards, but the timing of it, just a few days out from the Carabao Cup final, what do you make of the sacking of Jose?
I think it's in some ways a sort of typical Daniel Levy move. I think he might have seen an opportunity to get somebody in who he thinks could perhaps just get them back into the Champions League, to European football. And also, if there is a good day to bury some bad news, and they always intended to sack Mourinho, then why not do it now when there's so much focus on the Super League?
That was Martin Ziegler of The Times in London on this Super League proposal involving clubs in England and indeed right across Europe. Shep, what have you made of that story over the last few days? Obviously, it's garnered a lot of reaction and a lot of negative reaction.
Yeah, look, it's pitiful. It's, I suppose, the ultimate greed from the top clubs, and I suppose it's taken from the poor and given to the rich, which I suppose for fans, it's not sit well at all. You can see there's uproar. You hear Gary Neville's comments on the back of it, and I suppose you're looking at it, I'm looking at it now going, I really hope that the FAI use this as an opportunity to market the league better. This is a prime moment now for the FAI to go, okay, fans are really unhappy supporting English clubs. Now's the time to push the league, give a bit of backing and go, you know what, let's make the players that are there now idols like they have in, let's say, the rugby, for example. Everywhere you look, hopefully over the next few months, you see people turning towards League of Ireland. And I really hope that off the back of this, people will go down to their local club and whether it's buy a jersey or go to a match when games are back open for fans. I really hope that this is something, a turning point for the League of Ireland.
Do you think it will be, James, a turning point for the League of Ireland? Because fans of League of Ireland have been crying out for that kind of interest and ambition from the FAI for so long now.
Yeah, they have. And you even look at it since last night when the actual official press statement came out, how many of the League of Ireland clubs have put out their own little videos suggesting that, you know what, if you want to be part of a fan-owned club, we're here on your doorstep, come along and look at us. Will the FAI run with it? I hate to say this, but if you're going on previous years, probably not. They'll probably just let it go by. It is a prime opportunity to start marketing the league properly. I remember at the start, maybe last season, the season before, we had billboards close to clubs with players on them. This is a ripe opportunity now to get out and get some of them billboards put up again, especially around areas within a kilometre of a ground or something like that. Would be absolutely fantastic. Fingers crossed they can do something about it, but as I said, I'm usually a pessimistic, but not in this case, unfortunately.
All right, on to the First Division results from the weekend. Bray Wanderers 1, Athlone Town 2. Curtis Byrne with both goals for Athlone, who came from behind to win at the Carlisle Grounds. As we mentioned a little earlier, Cork City 1, Shelburne 3. A pretty emphatic win, according to Shep, for Shells by 3-1, albeit Cork were in front in that game. Dylan McGlade with a penalty after 8 minutes. Ali Gilchrist level for Shells, and further goals followed from Shane Farrell and Yusuf Mahdi, the former UCD player from the spot. Galway snatched an injury time equaliser at home against Treaty United at Eamon DC Park, 1-1 there. Colm Whelan with a hat-trick for UCD against Cabinteely, 4-1. And Wexford 1, Cove Ramblers 2, Cove's first win of the season, and it emerged at Ferry Carrick Park. James, Colm Whelan, a hat-trick, scored hatful of goals as well last season for UCD. Do you know much about him?
Only what I've seen of him last year, to tell you the truth. I haven't seen anything of him this year because obviously Watch LOI has taken up most of my time. But there's usually somebody there that comes through in that squad that carries the goal. Yo-Yo Matty was one for the last couple of years. So it's good for them to see results go their way, and someone scoring goals is... they're 10 a penny now, aren't they? Shep was probably the last person who could score a hat-trick in a game, I think.
I don't know about that.
Well, the Athlone Town manager might be able to tell us a little bit about Colm Whelan, because Athlone are top of the table. Adrian Carberry's on the line. Tell us about Colm Whelan, because he'll be going out in the mid-season break to try and sign him to push for promotion. How are you doing, Adrian?
Good afternoon, guys. How are you?
Good, not too bad. Listen, well done. Terrific start to the season.
He's done very well the last couple of years. He scored a couple of goals against us last year. I was part of Yo-Yo last year. They scored over 25 goals between them. So he's been on the radar the last two seasons.
And you're going very nicely, your own team, Athlone Town. Great start, very eye-catching.
Yeah.
Are you pleased? You must be pleased, surely.
Look, we're delighted with the start. But again, Adrian, like everything else, it's only a start. Long way to go. There's no parties being set up or anything like that in Athlone. You know, we knew from last year we had a lot of improving to do. We think we've done that quite well, but again, it's only a start. I think teams are just to find their feet, and it will even out, I think, as we go along. But it's a great start. We're delighted with it.
It is very early, of course, but on 10 points out of a possible 12, UCD on 8, Shelburne on 8 as well, and then Treaty United coming next on 6 points and Cavatelli on 6 points. A lot of new players at Athlone Town, and has that made a big difference? You brought in the likes of Killian Cantwell, Adam Wickstead, Curtis Byrne, obviously, who got 2 goals. James Doon is there as well. How big an impact have the new players made?
They've been fantastic. Adrian, it's like everything else. You're worried about when you bring these players in at the start. Will it click? Will it take a while? And you can see other clubs are probably taking a while to gel. We got in early. We knew last year we were way short. I think the 11-0 against Dundalk really hammered it home for us that we needed a big change. And we did that. We got in early. We got players, talking to players, and we got them in. And it's gone well in pre-season, gone very well. Other than the matches, there were some poor results in the games, but we knew it'd be hard because we played full-time teams. We knew it was going to be hard, and that's what pre-season should be. But I think we stole a march on other clubs. We got a business done early. We were worried about it, I have to be honest. We were worried about all the amount of players coming in, but we've hit the ground running and we're delighted with it.
And Adrian, you have hit the ground running. Are you a bit shocked by how well they've actually gelled together, all those players coming in?
Yeah, I have to say we are. We thought it'd take a bit more time. I still think we haven't hit our full potential yet. I think we're still getting better as we go along. There's more to come from them, but you know, the start has been brilliant. The start has been absolutely fantastic. Even just watching training, the quality of some of these players that have come in, and you named one or two of them, have been fantastic. Curtis Byrne, look, right throughout, there's Killian Cantwell, even Dylan Hand, who let go by Longford, has been fantastic for us. Like a Singerman experience goalkeeper, which we really needed. They've all added to it. Every player that's come in has added to it. And we've kept on a couple of good players from last year as well, have done well, are still waiting. I suppose when you have a start like we had, some players miss out and don't get a chance as of yet, but that will come. It's a long season and we will need a full squad.
And Adrian, you mentioned the cup defeat last year, the cup semi-final defeat to Dundalk, 11-0. And we spoke with you on the podcast prior to that cup semi-final. And there was a great sense of anticipation and excitement around Athlone ahead of that. In the aftermath of losing a match so heavily, how hard was that for you and for the players to have to deal with?
Yeah, I won't lie to you. It's kind of, you know, we touched on it a bit the last time. It took a while. It took a while to, you know, you're probably still, we won't get too high this year, even with the way things are going, because we are, it's not too long ago, or like, you know, we won game against Galway at home this season, and the last game before that at home, was an 11-0 defeat. So yeah, we won't jump too much ahead of ourselves. It does take a lot to get over. I'll be honest, from players, from management as well, we've got a soul searching ourselves, go back and looking at what we do things differently. And this will help. You'll always keep you grounded. I think you need that in football. It will help us. We won't forget it too easily. And we'll use this going forward. And that was the thing we said afterwards. You know, it'd be a shame to have something like that and not use it in your ammo going forward to make sure that we're never in that position again. Please God.
And are you hopeful in 2021 of sustaining this great start and pushing on?
Yeah, it's the old, people say, talk about the old cliches in football, but there's a lot of truth in these, you know. We've got to take each game as it comes, and, you know, we cannot look forward more than, any further forward, sorry, than Wexford next Friday night, who will come in into this league, into the game, and make it very hard for us. The one thing about this league, there is a lot of inconsistency in it. You know, whereas you might win one game and lose the next. This happens a lot with teams. We've just got to make sure we can keep it going, keep picking up points, and no more so than against Wexford on Friday night. This will be a huge game for us. You know, we really need to hit ground running in this one as well.
I was lucky enough to see the game against Cork where, look, it was a fantastic win. What really struck me was that how good your front three was. You must be very excited at the thought of that front three clicking, especially with Adam Wickstead coming in off one side and James doing it off the other, and then you can obviously see the quality that Curtis Byrne has.
Yeah, we get to see them in training as well, which is, Curtis Byrne is frightening what he can do with a football. Look, we're delighted. These are guys that, you know, Curtis aside, maybe Curtis has a great career and still going strong. But Adam Wickstead and probably James Dino were big clubs and probably didn't get the full, you know, weren't really trusted fully, I suppose, or given the full, didn't produce what they can produce, really. And we just brought them in and give them a chance to go and have another go at it and see. And we're reaping the benefits of that. They've been fantastic. And they are fighting going forward. But I have to say, and you mentioned the Cork game, and one of the things that really, really impressed me about that was their work with going back to Wexford as well. when we lost the ball, when we were under a bit of pressure, both Woodsy and James Dino were working very hard defensively for us, and that really helped us get across the line with that slender victory.
Okay, well, it's a fascinating first division. Keep it going, Adrian. It's great to see Athlone doing so well, and obviously a big game against Wexford on Friday night. Thanks for joining us on the Orchard Soccer Podcast. Cheers. So apart from Athlone against Wexford on Friday, Cabinteely take on Shelburne. Galway United meeting UCD and Treaty United against Cork City in what is a Munster derby. And there's one match then on Saturday at 7 o'clock, Cove Ramblers against Bray Wanderers at St Colman's Park. All the games, of course, live on LOI TV. In terms of the Women's National League, another busy weekend of action. Bohemians 3, Cork City 3. Quite a dramatic game at the Oscar Traynor Centre on Saturday afternoon. Chloe Darby with a late penalty for Bows. We can hear from the Cork skipper Becky Casson very shortly. But first, Bohemians' Chloe Darby.
Chloe, a draw today wasn't to be another win, but you still performed quite well.
Yeah, I suppose it's an improvement from last year because Cork beat us twice, so we wouldn't say happy with the draw, but we'll take it.
You scored yourself from the penalty spot, bring your sides level. That must have been brilliant for you.
Yeah, it was good, but then it's just about after scoring the penalty, you know, getting your head back into the game. There's 10 minutes to go and just didn't want to concede.
Aoife Robinson went very close in the last couple of minutes. It could have been a goal. It should have been a goal. But, you know, you were still happy to put in that good performance.
Yeah, it was a great save, to be fair, to the keeper off Cork. Robbo's good. I love when she's playing with me on the pitch. We've great chemistry.
And you did quite well yourself in midfield. And, you know, you were trying to get forward loads. It's a pity you almost couldn't score more goals.
Yeah, unfortunately. But, I mean, we'll play them again and we've more matches to come. So, more wins, hopefully.
You're playing Piemont next weekend. That's going to be a really big game. How are you feeling about that?
It's going to be a tough match. They're the champions. But I suppose we'll work on them in training and we'll get a good training week in before we play them.
Disappointed. I think it's a 2 points dropped for us, to be honest. You know, we were good in stages in the first half, but the inconsistency kind of killed us and went away from us then in the second half. We have to build again next week and hopefully get a win against DLR.
You definitely are well able to score goals anyway, so that's one thing to take a positive from.
Yeah, we score plenty. I think we just need to tighten up. I think it was just, you know, giving the ball away in silly areas possibly, but we want to play out from the back and there's risks with that, and we'll learn from them and hopefully build on it for next week and improve.
Abby McCarthy made a great save at the end to keep you level in it. That must have been brilliant for you to know that she's such a strong part of the team in the goals.
Yeah, and she has been for the last three games. She's been superb. I think the scorelines would have been a lot different if she wasn't in there for us. Today she was brilliant again, and she's going to be she's going to play such a big role for us in the coming games.
Yeah, Bohemians 3, Cork City 3. Elsewhere, DLR Waves 2, Galway 1. Katie Malone with the late winner for DLR Waves. Treaty United 1, Wexford Youths 7. A sensational 4 goals in that game for Ellen Malloy. And the big game of the weekend, Piemont United 2, Shelburne 1, Eleanor Ryan Doyle and Áine O'Gorman with the goals for Piemont before Shells pulled one back through Kira Grant. And James, that was a significant win because you do feel that matches between Piemont and Shells in the Women's National League are going to be crucial in terms of the outcome of the league, even though it's still very early in the campaign.
Yeah, you'd expect them to really push between themselves and Wexford, of course, as the three teams that have, over the last number of years, have put it up. But what about Áine scoring with the wrong foot? That's even better, like scored with her left foot. I didn't think she had one. Thought it was only for standing on.
Yeah, Shells top of the table at the moment on 6 points, but Piemont also on 6. So Shells leading the way on goal difference, and crucially Piemont with a game less played. Shells with 3 games played, Piemont with 2 games played. Wexford lie in third place on 4 points, along with Bowes and Galway. Now, in terms of the Premier Division at the weekend, obviously we've got the round of matches, lads, on Tuesday, but just to reference the matches coming up at the weekend, on Friday night we've got Finn Harps against St Pat's at 6:15, that game live on Watch LOI. And of course, live on RT2 television, Shamrock Rovers against Bohemians. Big one that. We'll get the thoughts of the lads in just a moment. And 3 games all kicking off at 6 o'clock on Saturday. Dundalk against Drogheda United in the Louth Derby. Sligo Rovers against Derry City, Northwest Derby. And Waterford against Longford Town. But Shep, Shamrock Rovers against Bohemians. It's always a big one. It's always tasty. Of course, we won't have fans at Talla Stadium, but it's still a mouth-watering prospect, isn't it?
It is. It's. I suppose it's one of the games you go look for straight away in the season when the fixtures come out, is when do Shamrock Rovers play Bows? And it is such a shame that the fans aren't there. But again, knowing that the players and knowing the management that both sides have, both teams will be right up for it. And even though there won't be the fans there, as I said, it'll certainly have that derby atmosphere that I suppose you know will come with a Rovers Bows game.
All right, listen, lads, we leave it there. That's, we can talk about all of that next Monday, of course, the outcome of the big Dublin derby between Shamrock Rovers and Bohemians. And as we know, so much can happen in football in the space of a few days. But that's all we have time for on this edition of the RT Soccer Podcast. Until next week, from James and Shep and everybody involved, from all of us, bye-bye.